All right, I am Hans.
And I am Franz, and we just want to pop
your
compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Cyrus, if you were in prison and they wanted you to get the coronavirus vaccine, what do you think they would try to convince you with? What would they offer you to convince you to get the jab?
How about a reduced sentence?
No.
Some money when I get out.
No.
More TV time.
No.
Okay, I'm out. I don't know.
What if they offered you ramen noodles?
Like the...
Because that's what they're doing.
Like the kind of ramen noodles I grew up on?
Like, yeah, the little, you know, the packets.
Pack.
Uh-huh. You can stay alive on those things for a while.
Yeah.
This is the Daily Wire. Check it out. So if you ever find yourself there, no, not that you ever would. But a jail in Washington state is offering inmates ramen noodles if they'll get the coronavirus vaccine. This is the Benton County Jail.
What an incentive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose that's currency after a fashion. So they offered packs of instant noodles to inmates who sign up for their first COVID-19 shot. The program is called Soup for Shots. It has achieved results in about 3 weeks since it was implemented at the beginning of the month. On Sunday, the jail said it expected to distribute 900 packets of ramen noodle soup packets. I guess that's redundant. We're doing everything we can to do to incentivize vaccination. We're getting an outstanding response. Posters around the jail reportedly advertise the new vaccine incentive and note that the prize only applies to the inmate's first shot. To encourage support for COVID vaccination, the Benton County Department of Corrections will be providing each inmate that starts their vaccination series with 10 free ramen noodle soups. I'm assuming that you'd have to have like a hot plate in your cell. You'd have to have, I mean, I guess you can get running water out of the sink. But how would they make it? It doesn't say.
I grew up on the ramen noodles, and you get so bored with the soup, and then you make the noodles. I got to the point where I just take the... You know, the hard, you take it out of the package and I just dump the MSG stuff all over it and I just eat it like that.
I mean, like bite it like
it was
biscuit?
Like it was crunchy. Biscuit? Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. You're weird.
it gets real boring after a while.
If you ever find yourself in the Sedgwick County Jail in Wichita, Kansas, they're offering inmates $10 in commissary items to get the vaccine. $10 is equal to about 8 or 10 packets of ramen, 4 bags of chips and jalapenos. So choose which prison you're going to wisely. And if you don't like ramen noodles, don't go to that one. That's all. Just a little announcement. Yeah, I've eaten my share of those ramen noodles. I don't think they're good for you, though. 888-914-9149. Now we'll go to Carolyn in Round Rock, Texas. Thanks for your patience, Carolyn. Welcome.
Thank you, Patrick. Hey, thanks for the laugh about the ramen noodles, because I'm kind of nervous about telling my story.
Okay, fair enough.
It's about drugs. I started like at 14, and I started with marijuana, and I didn't like it, you know. So I thought, well, what else can I try to make me feel better, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I would do anything, acid, mescaline, uppers, downers, whatever, okay? And all of this with alcohol included. And
at the age of 14?
Well, starting to do drugs. Not alcohol so much, but drugs, yes. I got into a group that was their thing, you know. And before that, I was like a straight-laced girl.
Mm-hmm.
And,
how were you getting these drugs? Because some of those are pretty hard drugs. How are you obtaining them?
Through friends. I mean, back then in the 60s, Patrick, it was everywhere. I mean, you know, and you just took it. You didn't even think about it. You just took it, you know?
Okay.
And I guess I had enough sense to know I had an addictive personality not to get, even try heroin. Mm-hmm. But the next thing was crystal meth, and I got hooked on crystal meth, and for a long time, and you have to have alcohol to kind of bring you down, you know, when you have to go to work the next day. And guess what? The next morning, you still wake up with the same problems. You just feel worse. It hasn't helped anything that you're dealing with, right? Mm-hmm. And one night, I just got so low that I finally got down on my hands and knees, and I asked God. I said, God, what is wrong? I mean, why? What can I do? And he actually, this was like the first time that he actually spoke to me, and he told me, Carolyn, alcohol and drugs are the cause of most of your shame. And I quit that night. You know, he gave me the, I don't know, he just helped me to let it go, you know, to where I didn't deal with it anymore. And the only thing that can fill your heart that you really need is him. And all that other stuff just masks it. So, you know, one thing leads to another, and you can go down a long road for a long time.
I can imagine. I can only imagine.
I just,
have you ever seen the before and after pictures of people who have been addicted to meth? You know, you see these beautiful young women or these handsome young men, and then like a year later, 2 years later, after being on meth, they're just destroyed. They look like skeletons, and they've got scabs on their faces, and it's horrifying how drastic this transition can be in just a short period of time. Have you ever seen those pictures?
Yes, yes, I have. I didn't get to that point, but I did get to 111 pounds, and that was a pretty light for me. And when I look back at those pictures, I was just like, oh, my God, Carolyn, how did you not just see this in the mirror, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How did you not see this stuff? But when you're addicted, it's hard to see it, you know, because that's all you want to do.
So how did you overcome the addiction? Obviously, if it's got a grip on you like that, did you go cold turkey? Did you step down with methadone? Or how did you get away from it?
I just stopped. I just stopped. And, you know, the one thing was that, you know, that was the thing that drew me and my husband together. And he didn't stop. You know, he didn't stop. And
he didn't stop using?
Still there. No. No. And I just quit. I just couldn't do it anymore. And
is he still using
divorced.
Drugs?
I don't know. I had to get a divorce. I had to get out. You know, it was, I had to get away from it. That was another time, God, you know, when I went through a traumatic experience and I asked God, I said, what can I do? And he told me to go from the dark to the light. Mm. And I took it. I just had to get out, you know.
Well, thank God that you were able to get out. So many people don't make it out, Carolyn. Thank you. Praise God. And thank you for taking a moment to share that with us. I can only imagine how that would be a little terrifying to share such a personal story on national radio, but I'm glad you did for the sake of people who may be exactly where you used to be right now. I think you've given them some encouragement on what they can do. Thank you. Let's go to Michael in Redding, California. Hi, Michael.
Good morning, Patrick. I wanted to comment on the gentleman who spoke earlier about the jobs and employees.
Yeah.
Businesses are going to survive, and I'll give you a perfect example, and that was the Dippin' Dots franchise.
Okay.
It used to be a store, 1,400 square feet in a mall. They had electricity, they had rent, they had employees. And finally, one day they woke up, and now it's a 4-foot by 4-foot machine. And you walk up and put your money in, and it drops one cone, a perfect amount of ice cream, perfect number of dots. And it's done. So we will overcome the lack of people. It's just going to take a little while. McDonald's is experimenting with completely employee-less, almost a kiosk, fast food.
You know, to your point, Michael, I saw that for the very first time a couple years ago when Nancy and I were in London. And we went into McDonald's to get a cup of coffee. It was middle of the afternoon. And it was the weirdest. I'd never seen this before. There was no counter. There was no front counter. There was a very small window in the wall where the counter would have been, and it was all touch screens, which I think is what you're referring to. So, I mean, I couldn't even talk to anybody. So I ordered my coffee on the touch screen, and some head popped out with a cup of coffee out of that little window and handed me my coffee, and it was weird. And now it's the wave of the future. Things are more and more going that direction, aren't they?
SAR and radio is a perfect example too. 25 years ago, you had all night DJs.
Yeah.
And then somebody came up with an automated machine. Well, the automated machine was $120,000, which at that time was a lot. But as the minimum wages kept being forced up, and those machines, as more people came into the business, the price went down. Pretty soon, you got to that break-even point, and you bought an automated machine and eliminated all the jobs.
Right.
So it's going to happen that way. And, you know, so people who think they're going to live in this perfect land of extra money and when it runs out, go get a job, they're not going to be there.
That's an interesting point. Well, there's also people like Elon Musk and others who are raising the issue about what about once we've automated so many things and there isn't work for a lot of people, what are they going to do? And so universal basic income is on the way. And it may be here sooner than later where people will just get their $2,000 a month and not have to do anything except stay home and play Xbox. By the way, you get a special prize today, Michael, because you came up with another great garage band name, the All Night DJs. I think that'd be a great band name.
Yeah, but people have to remember what that is. There's less and less of us every day that remember that.
Yeah, I know.
So it's
I know what you mean. You know, I showed my kids. Now, my oldest son is just turning 40. My youngest son is 20. And I don't know, 6, 8 years, maybe not even that long ago, Michael, I showed my kids a picture of a 45 record insert, you know, the plastic insert that we'd put in the 45 records.
Right.
None of them could tell me what it was.
Oh,
they had never seen it. They had never experienced that. And when I did that and I said, do you know what this is? And none of them knew what it was. And I just realized a massive amount of culture did not transfer from my generation to their generation. Just things like that. It was weird.
In the studios, you had a turntable, you had a cart machine, you had all of that. I mean, they took a lot of equipment. Now you walk in and there's a computer.
Yeah.
And
Cyrus can tell you all about that.
The transmitters are the size of a computer now, a 1,000-watt transmitter.
Do you remember going to the record store to buy a new needle for your phonograph?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Or vacuum
and when
tubes.
When I didn't play right, I stuck pennies on top of the needle.
That's right.
And slowly it grooved the records out until there wasn't any more music in it.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I'm 68, so I remember all of the good stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's
my
awesome.
Dad used to take me to the grocery store with him from time to time. They would have that little kiosk box in the front of the grocery store where you could buy new vacuum tubes for the TV. And
with a tester.
Yeah, it had a tester, exactly. So he would bring his box or bag of vacuum tubes in and he would test them and then he'd buy the new ones. It was just, it's a lost part of our civilization. I mean, you can't help it, but it is interesting to think about it. Well, Michael, thank you. And I agree with you. Automation is definitely here to stay and it's going to get bigger. What were we going to say, Cyrus?
Oh, I showed my son my record collection. And so we played a couple songs and he's like, that's cool. And then the other day he went in and just started, he wanted to play a record by himself. So he went in there and he's like, Dad, this sounds terrible. And he had not taken off the plastic needle protection guard. So
that's funny.
Like, you're murdering my records. Get out of here.
That's and you're on the borderline because you know you were born in the 70s, so you're almost at the tail end of anybody who would have ever even had records.
Yeah, records are great.
Wow.
Yeah.
I saw a video. I wish I had saved it, but I saw a video of a dad giving his kids. How was it? He gave them. I think it was a rotary phone. And he asked the kids to make a phone call. So here's the number, make a phone call. And they could not figure out how to use a rotary phone. They didn't know how to actually make it, how to make a phone call. Because they didn't realize you had to bring your finger all the way to the end and then let go of it. Remember how, you know, that would be.
Oh,
so
yeah.
And it's interesting to see how, because we've gotten so advanced so quickly, that things that we used to take for granted like that are just meaningless.
I saw a baby with a magazine, and instead of turning page, the baby was swiping. It was swiping the image, trying to swipe the images on the magazine.
I'll go you one better. I, from time to time, if I'm looking at a magazine or some print, I will, without thinking about it, I'll take my fingers to try to expand the picture. You ever do that where you put your fingers on it and you move them apart to make a picture bigger?
On a magazine?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, or on a book. It's like, I'm so used to doing that because I see so many things on screens that if I'm reading a book or something that's got a picture, just absentmindedly, I'll find myself trying to expand the picture in the book with my fingers.
Oh, okay, yeah. You win.
Yeah, well, you know, come tomorrow, you'll have a better story than that. But that happens to me from time to time. Thank you, Cyrus. Let's go to Therese now in Wisconsin. Hi, Therese.
Hi. Well, I hope you're not disappointed I'm not here to talk about drugs.
No, it's fine.
For the record, I would know what a 45 is, actually, and I'm only in my 20s.
Well, you're that, unique so. For your age group, I would say.
Apparently. So my question is on the Eucharist.
Okay.
And my question is, if we believe that we receive the fullness of the sacrament, that Jesus is fully present, body, blood, soul, and divinity, under even the smallest particle of either species, then why do we receive both?
We receive both as a way of heightening or emphasizing the symbolism, even though the Eucharist is more than a symbol. It is a symbol, but it's more than a symbol. So you can, as you said correctly, you can receive all of Jesus in either form, either in the host or in the precious blood. But to receive the two together, it enhances or it intensifies the symbol of the Lord's body and blood.
Okay.
I think that's the reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would you say maybe there's kind of a particular sort of grace with that, or a unique?
I don't know. No, you don't get more grace if you receive under both kinds than you do if you receive under one kind. There's no extra grace given in that regard.
Sure. But just that it's different.
You aware of the fact that you are consuming the Lord's body and blood, and that you're receiving all of his glorified, resurrected body, blood, soul, and divinity, then so much the better. But it's not as though you get X percent of grace when you receive the host, and then if you receive from the chalice, you get X more percent of grace. It's not like that, if that's what you mean.
Sure. No, that's not really what I mean. Okay. I guess just because, like, I'm hearing people, you know, talk about how much they miss receiving under both forms as we did pre-COVID, and now we don't. And I don't necessarily understand how they're looking at it or why that's so painful for them.
You know, I don't either. And I'll say this, that it is kind of a novelty to receive under both kinds in the Latin Rite of the Church. And for a very, very long time, going back to some of the earlier centuries in the Church's history, lay people never received under both kinds. It just was never done. Maybe at your wedding, perhaps, you might receive under both kinds. And one of the reasons was that there was a heresy that would pop up here and there known as utraquism, which from the Latin, which means both and. And the Church took care to try to help people realize that you don't have to receive under both kinds to receive all of Jesus. And utraquism was this misunderstanding, a kind of a heresy that people thought that you had to receive both in order to get all of Jesus. And so that was one reason. It's not the only reason. But lay people receiving under both kinds is very recent, very, very new, really only since the time, let's say right around the time of the Second Vatican Council. The liturgical renewal was underway even as far back as Pope Pius XII and a little bit before him, but it didn't really become a thing the way we experience it today that way. Now, I myself, typically, I when I go to Mass, I usually never receive from the chalice. And I always receive, you know, the host, and I don't miss it at all. It does, to me, it's just like it's not an issue one way or the other. So for some people, they're very emotionally attached to it. Okay, that's fine. No problem with that. And then maybe for the minority, maybe like me, it was never really something that I was attached to. So I don't really notice it post-COVID. Anyway, I've got to take a break, though. Thank you very much, Therese. Nice to chat with you about this topic. We'll be right back with more right after this. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149.
We've got it.
That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Thanks, Cindy Gonzalez on Twitter. She says, Patrick, for my internship for my master's degree, I was at an inpatient rehab. All of my patients started with pot. Pot is a gateway drug. And then Mac responded to her saying the other gateway for many is witnessing alcoholism in the family as children. And Cindy responded saying every single addict had used pot in the beginning, but not all drank. They have one thing in common, self-medicate. There is something in their past that is haunting them. Ask God to reveal it and have him fill your heart. Well, that is very good advice. Very good advice indeed. Let's go to Dan in Washington, D.C. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Patrick. I have a question. How can the church say they are for the indissolubility of marriage, given most U.S. dioceses have 90 to 100% annulment grant rates?
Okay, well, if I understand your question correctly, a valid marriage is indissoluble. An invalid marriage can be declared as null, and that's what the process determines. The process is designed to determine, was this marriage null from the beginning in terms of its validity, or was it a valid marriage? In the case of valid marriage, that cannot be dissolved. In the case of an invalid marriage, it can be declared invalid. So the church is not dissolving marriages. The church is not doing anything against what Jesus said, what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. But the church undertakes to determine whether or not there was a valid marriage in the first place. Does that make sense? Does that make sense, Dan?
Well, Patrick, it seems though that 100%, if the diocese is people are petitioning and they're granting 100% annulments, that seems high. That would suggest that the church is marrying lots of people who don't intend to stay together permanently. And
yeah,
if they're witnessing this, it would seem like they would have to at least do something on the front end. But it just seems surprising to me that with the United States having most annulments granted in the world, and that 90 to 100% of petitions are granted, it seems like there's a problem there.
Yeah, it sure does. And this is something that's discussed in canon law circles. I'm not a canon lawyer, but I try to read the literature and follow some blogs that do discuss this. One of the reasons, as I understand it, that there are so many invalid marriages is because of the canonical form that's required for Catholics to get married. And nowadays, and this has been true for some time now, many Catholics just ignore it. And so one of the requirements for validity in the case of a Catholic is to be married according to the canonical form. And if you're not, and you see that from the very beginning, then it is an invalid marriage. Now, maybe the church will remove that provision from its code of canon law so it's no longer a requirement. And that would make it more likely that marriages and more marriages would be valid, but that seems to be part of the problem. I agree. It strikes me as scandalous at times that the rate of granting annulments is as high as it is. It's almost as if, you know, you send in your petition and you can almost be assured you're going to get a yes answer.
Yeah,
but
I'll finish with this. I know there's a lot of people in the queue. I mean, I just don't. I can't comprehend how, you know, a guy who's like 50 years old leaves his wife, stay-at-home mom, three kids, marries 26-year-old girlfriend, church gives an annulment. They say, look, you had a personality disorder. You can get met. But now the personality disorder is miraculously solved after three sessions with a Catholic counselor. Go ahead, marry the 26-year-old girlfriend and we'll welcome you into a church ceremony. That seems incomprehensible to me. I think it's incomprehensible to most practicing Catholics, and I think the church has a real problem on its hands if they want to keep people in the church.
That's why I said I think it's scandalous. It appears scandalous at times because of things like what you just described. You know, if you can get an easy out of your marriage, You know, you want a younger model. And if it seems easy to do, I could see people taking advantage of that, no question about it. So on the front end, on the church's side of things, I don't presume to critique the tribunals or the advocates or the defenders of the bond or the judges or anyone who's involved in the process, because I've never been in that process myself. I don't know all that goes into it. My assumption is that they're sincere and they're thorough. But I scratch my head and say, why do we have so many annulments? And almost always it's granted. It seems problematic to me too, Dan. You and I are on the same wavelength.
Okay, thank you, Patrick.
You got it. Thank you. Let's go to Jose now in South Texas. Hi, Jose.
Hey, Patrick. I just want to let you know that I agree with you in the fact that we're going towards a... Well, I don't think you say this, but I believe that we're going towards a universal income.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty much, you know, part of the plan, part of the plan of the communists, you know. Marx of the Communist Manifesto, he talks about the automation of the society, I think, work, and that created the issues with working class, right?
Mm-hmm. With the proletariat.
Later, there you go, the proletariat, which will later, you know, provide with the revolution, the communist revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is being encouraged, you know, to have socialist or communist the governments around the world.
Right.
And
a worker's paradise.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I just can't stop thinking about linking those actions, you know, from the world governments, mm-hmm. and the politicians of most of the countries, if not all. And it's just scary, you know. Maybe we're heading towards, you know, a global, you know, socialist, communist government. Who knows?
I think we are.
I just wanted to share.
Yeah, in this country especially, I see all the signs of a concerted effort to lurch to the left, to lurch toward socialism / communism, but maybe not under those names, because Americans, I think, have been conditioned to view those, and rightfully so, with suspicion. But I think the left very much would like to go more in that direction if they could. And the question of universal basic income, I find fascinating for this reason that, you know, if I'm paying out money in taxes, I would rather have that come back to me, at least part of it, if possible. Yes, I want to support the government. Yes, I want, you know, safe bridges and roadways and all the things that our tax money go to. I think we should be paying taxes to support those things, but I think we pay too many taxes. So on the one hand, I do kind of like the idea of getting some of that money that I paid in taxes back, and the same for you. I do like the idea of people not having to scramble and not have to worry about if they're going to make their rent or if they can, you know, survive and get food and such. So I like the idea of a safety net of universal basic income, but how are you going to pay for it is the question. And automation is part of it, as you pointed out, and the gentleman who called earlier, because obviously a robot doesn't need vacation days off, doesn't get pregnant, doesn't need, you know, doesn't clock out. These robots can do the work far better in many cases than human beings can with a much smaller error rate. But the main thing is, what do you do with all these idle people, and how do you pay for that? And I find that very troubling. What if everybody's at home playing Xbox, and the robots are working, but everyone's at home eating pizza and playing Xbox? I think that's a recipe for disaster. Not to mention, idleness is the devil's workshop. And if you, especially young people, if you've got nothing to do, well, you're going to find mischief to do at some point. It's inevitable, it seems, and that's not a good thing either.
I agree totally. I'm a product of the 90s. I was born in 93, and I can tell you that starting with my generation, I saw a favorably, you know, look towards socialism and communism.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a former socialist. You know, I opened my eyes to God, to the church.
That's good.
But now
you threw away your Che Guevara shirt, I hope, right?
I did, for sure. I had this little cat, you know, like him. So, I mean, I see it everywhere, even unfortunately, even in the church. So it is scary out there. It is quite scary. And, you know, just fast and prayer. That's the best we can do.
Let me ask you a question, Jose, before you go. I don't know what you do for a living. In a way, it doesn't matter. But let's say that the government said, listen, we're phasing out your job. We're going to pay you $3,500 a month, and you don't have to do anything. But that'll float your boat. You know, you can buy food and pay rent. Do you think that the average person your age would say, okay? Or do you think the average person would say, no, I want to work. I want to earn my money. Which way do you think it would go?
Oh, for sure. They'll say yes to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for because sure. Why not?
I mean, well, of course. I mean, it's free money, right? That was my deal, you know, like, what, 4 years ago. I'll say, yes, of course. I'll be happy to do that. But, you know, it's just a lie. It, like you said, idleness is the workshop of the devil. I mean, that when you're idle, when you don't have anything to do, you're just overthinking or thinking about, you know, you're just tempted, right?
Right.
So now I see it differently. But yeah, for sure, they'll say, not me anymore. Mm-hmm. They'll take the money for sure. Absolutely.
There's an old saying, and you may have heard it before. If you are idle, don't be alone. And if you are alone, don't be idle. Because if you're idle and you got nothing to do and you're by yourself, you know, I think we can all pretty much figure out what will happen. People will start getting into mischief, and it's, you know, bad for them. Anyway, I have to press on, Jose. Thank you. I'm so happy that you threw away your Che Guevara shirt. I was in Buenos Aires once, and I got into an argument with the shopkeeper, you know, like in the area where they've got the, you know, the birthplace of tango. And I was in there to get some postcards or something, and they're selling the Che Guevara shirt, and this guy comes over. You know, we're talking in Spanish, and he said something about, what, you want to buy a Che Guevara shirt? I said, why would I want to buy that? And he looked at me, because he's from Argentina. He looked at me like, well, what do you mean? I said, well, the guy was a murderer. He was a horrible, despicable person. He was responsible for the death of hundreds, maybe hundreds of thousands of people. He was a terrible person. Why would you want that picture on anything? And he didn't know any of that. He just thought Che Guevara was just like a rock star, and he was just this super guy, and isn't it great that he's from Argentina? And of course they sell tons of shirts and caps and like, but he didn't even really believe me. And I told him, you need to read some history, my friend, because he was a very bad person. And I think when I left his store, he was just like, wow, that guy's crazy. I've never heard anything like that before. Thanks, Jose. Thank you. Let's go to George in Anaheim. Hi, George.
Hello, Patrick.
Yes, hi.
Hey, so I want to ask you about an article I just read a few minutes ago regarding the Pope and some comments he made. So, okay. Some Jewish rabbis are taking offense that the Pope Francis, speaking about the Torah, made comments saying that the Torah is obsolete, the Torah does not give fulfillment. It was given to the Jews for a time, you know, to show them the will of God, to show them justice, but that ultimately fulfillment is found in Christ, that life cannot be found in the Torah. And so I just want to see if what is the Catholic Church's official stance on the relationship between Judaism and the Catholic faith? I mean, has the Catholic faith, like, superseded, you know, made the Judaism obsolete or what?
Well, yes, it has. I mean, this is straight out of the New Testament. The law was fulfilled in Jesus. And so the law, with its legal demands and its 600 and some odd ceremonial precepts and laws, those things were all abolished. They were fulfilled in Jesus Christ. So the law was a tutor. The law was a guide. And it was preparing God's people for the coming of Jesus. But all of those things that were pointing toward Jesus and were merely symbolic of what was coming, yes, those things have all passed away. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't still revere the law that God gave to Moses. It's not that we don't observe it. So the Ten Commandments are still every bit as in force as they ever were. But properly understood, the law and the prophets and those things that the Jews have in their Bible, those are all good, but they're preparatory. and they have been completed. They've been perfected in Jesus Christ. So we are no longer, and the Pope is right, we no longer look to that punctilious keeping of all these ceremonial precepts as a means of salvation. Salvation is now in Christ. So I didn't read what you're referring to. I haven't seen it, but just based on what you said, the Pope is correct. I mean, but this is nothing new. I mean, this is what St. Paul was preaching to the Jews 2,000 years ago.
That's what I thought, because the Jewish rabbi, in the same article, he said that he thought that the Catholic Church did away with that kind of thinking regarding the Jews, and that he took it up with Cardinal Koch or Koch, I'm not sure how to say his name, mm-hmm. In the Vatican to bring it up with Pope Francis. I thought the Pope was right, too. I just wasn't sure. He kind of threw me off.
Yeah, I mean, read the Epistle to the Colossians, read the Epistle to the Galatians especially, and you will see where St. Paul is hammering this home. You no longer have to be circumcised. You no longer have to keep kosher. You no longer have to be subject to these laws that were limited and imperfect and symbolic of something that was coming. So I guess maybe the rabbis, and somebody just sent me a link to the article. It's in the Times of Israel. I haven't read it yet, but I will. But I guess those rabbis, they just have never really thought much about or been exposed to any Catholic teaching, because this is what the church has always taught. So they're late to the party, I guess, if they're just now understanding that this is what the church teaches. Now, I don't know how Pope Francis said it, and Pope Francis has a habit of shooting from the hip, and he tends to not be very precise. He tends to be very imprecise, but that doesn't mean that what he's saying is incorrect, but it may have been the way he said it that might have upset them. I don't know. But at its essence, you know, that teaching is correct. Judaism has been fulfilled.
Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Thanks, George. We have to take a break, and we'll come right back right after that, so please stay right there. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Hey, if you're irritated by COVID-related stuff here in the United States, just be glad you don't live in New South Wales, Australia. It's being reported that New South Wales, it's in southeastern Australia, is now requiring, the lunacy. They're now requiring certain people who live alone, if you want to have a visitor over, you have to first register with the government. No joke. On Monday, the New South Wales Health Department announced in a tweet that single people living in a local government area of concern are allowed to have only one COVID-19 nominated visitor, also known as a bubble buddy. Both the resident and the visitor must register online first. And they say on the registration page, a nominated visitor is someone you can socialize with at your place of residence who can only be one person, can visit you on more than one occasion, is not a nominated visitor for another person, and lives in or is staying within 5 kilometers of your home. So if you live further away from that, you can't be a bubble buddy. And this is insanity on stilts. It's getting insaner and insaner. Dumb and dumberer, if you ask me. So, Cyrus, do you have a designated bubble buddy?
Just you, man.
It would be Melanie for you, though, right?
Yeah.
Nancy's my bubble buddy.
That's crazy. I hadn't seen this story. This is crazy.
You have to register with the government if you want to have somebody to come over to your house to visit you. And they have to be registered with the government, and you only get that one bubble buddy.
Do you think that would fly here? Do you think people would be like, oh, okay?
No, it would not fly here, but you know what? There are people here who would be all over that. They would love that.
You know it.
they would be so excited to enforce something insane like that if they could here. That's what's scary, is that there are people here who it's their religion. The vaccine is their religion. The mask is their religion. The social distancing is their religion. And this to them would be like a whole new sacrament. Bubble buddy. Bubble buddy. I can't even say it right. Bubble buddy. Don't make that a hotkey. Don't make that a hotkey. All right. Let's go to Paul in Milwaukee. Hello, Paul. You're my bubble buddy for the moment. Welcome.
You've lost him.
You're speechless.
You lost him when you called him bubble buddy.
He's offended.
I'm not your
buddy. Don't be offended, Paul. You're on the air. He's offended.
Yeah, he's
all right. I'm sorry.
Quiet.
I tried, Paul. And we didn't even register with the government. Let's go to Maria in New York, New York. Hello, Maria.
Hey, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have kind of two questions. One is, do you have any suggestions on somebody, aka me, who is trying to understand the Bible like more thoroughly? For example, I will start at the beginning and I will try to read it, and then I get all confused and I'm just kind of like out of it and I'll stop. And then my second question is, in a similar sort of subject, is what would you recommend the first thing I should do to like really get the bare bone rules and regulations of like the Catholic Church?
Okay.
That kind of thing.
The bare bones. Got it. Well, why don't we start there? So are you talking about you want to know what the church teaches, or like what you want an overview of, like, you know, what does it mean to be a Catholic and, you know, what's expected and what do you believe? You want something like that?
I would say probably the latter, because I guess the more technical sort of things about the church, like I've read, you know, things that, like simple things such as like the St. Joseph Catechism for kids,
right,
and stuff like that.
That's
so
good.
I do
That's
have
a good
like
start.
The, you know, I do have the like the overview, but I guess the more technical sort of things. I mean, I've heard of stuff like something like the Council of Trent, for example. I don't know where I don't know, but just to get sort of
that would be kind of deep. Yeah. And so okay. Where you are, if you want to go a little further into the deeper end of the pool. A couple things. One, the catechism is indispensable. So if you have a catechism of the Catholic Church, that's the big one, then you would be able to pinpoint topics of interest. You could read your way through it. You know, you could hop around and find things that you want to know more about. That would be an authoritative one. For what it's worth, I wrote a book called Now What? A Guide for New and Not So New Catholics. And the goal of that book was to provide that kind of 50,000-foot overview and give a big picture look at what does the church teach, what's going on at Mass, what about the history of the church. So it's designed for people, whether they're new to the church or they just, you know, they just want to know, like you. So you can find that book online. You can, if you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, that's the show page. There is a section that says links. So if you click it, the very top link there will take you to where you can see the book and such. So that would be one suggestion. But definitely the catechism, because that will give you everything that you could possibly want to know about what does the church teach. And that would also tell you about the sacraments and Christian living and prayer and all of the above. Then as far as the Bible is concerned, Dr. Scott Hahn has got a great page on his website, scotthahn.com. in which he gives a lot of links to resources for Bible study. So whether it's a book or a website that has resources, commentaries, things of that nature, there's a lot there, and he's an expert, you know, at teaching Scripture, so that would be a good place to go. If you want a single volume kind of thing, there too, I wrote a book called A Year with the Bible, Biblical Wisdom for Daily Living. And that, too, it's a day-by-day reader in Scripture. Now, you won't read the whole Bible, but you'll read an awful lot of it. So each page, you could think of it as each page is the day. So you have the lesson or the verses from the Bible, And then you've got a prayer and a meditation and kind of a plan of action, like how would this Bible verse relate to you, and how could you put this into practice in your own life, some suggestions along those lines. So that's something that 365 pages later, you will have read a little bit each day. So by the end of 1 year, that would kind of guide you through a series of different aspects of the Bible. That's another possibility if you're interested.
Okay, yeah, that sounds actually very nice. Thank you so much. I'm just trying to become a better Catholic, a better Christian. And I've That's started good. Many things, but like I said, I get confused and just trying to look, you know, I needed some guidance on where to start. Can I ask you one last thing really quick? I'm sorry.
Sure.
I just wanted to know, what book in the Bible would you say, would you recommend is the number one book that we should all be reading, like right
I
now?
I would consider the four Gospels and the book of Acts. If you want to think of them as one book, I would say start with Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. Read your way through each of the four Gospels and then read the book of Acts. And if you have that, if you've mastered that, you're well on your way. Because what happens is you meet Jesus in the pages of the Gospels, and he will speak to you and teach you and illuminate you. So start there would be my advice.
Thank you so much, Patrick. I really appreciate it.
You got it, Maria. Thank you. Great talking to you. Let's go now to Margaret in Chicago. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. For the lady that just called, also, if she Googles Bible in a year, Father Mike Schmidt reads some, starts at the beginning and reads a few chapters every day, and you read the whole Bible within a year, and he explains them, and you go at your own pace. And it's really easy because you can listen to it, and he explains it because it is confusing. But the reason I did call is because what am I supposed to do on Sundays other than go to church? Am I allowed to go shopping? Am I allowed to cut the grass, do house?
Yeah, what you can do is avoid servile work, in other words, work that is unnecessary to be done on Sunday. And if you if the rest and relaxation with your family takes the form of going to a restaurant, that's permissible. Okay. If you want to have a big family meal, you know, and you need to go get some wine or go get some pasta and you have to go to the store, that's fine too. But if grocery shopping as a chore is something that you could have done any other day of the week, then don't do it on Sunday because that's unnecessary work. If you find that mowing the lawn, now I find mowing the lawn very relaxing. I have a large yard, so I have a rider mower, and I like to get out on the rider mower and put on my classic rock music and my headphones and just unplug my brain and be in the sun and mow the lawn. For me, that's very therapeutic and relaxing. So that is certainly permissible on a Sunday, but if it's a chore that you need to do and you just neglected to do it and now it's Sunday, then I would say, no, don't do that because it's not a form of relaxation or it's not a form of resting. And that's where you really draw the line. And there sometimes, Margaret, even like, let's say we have to have a repair done at our house or something. And the repairman says, well, I'll be there on Sunday. And I'll say, no, because, you know, we don't work on Sundays and I don't want you to be working for me on Sunday. So please let's make it another day. I think that's the rule of thumb to keep holy the Lord's Day is no unnecessary work. And if it's something that gives you rest and relaxation, like gardening or something, then that would be permissible. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. And I second the motion about Father Mike Schmitz. I'm a big fan of his. And everyone I've talked to who has been watching his or listening to his Through the Bible in a Year is very taken with it. He does a great job. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm surprised that I forgot to mention that. Let's go to Paul now in Milwaukee. Hi, Paul.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
A question. A while back, I heard you comment on an apologetics course. Did you say you teach one somewhere?
I do.
Did I misunderstand you?
No, you're correct. I teach at two institutions. So I teach at St. Patrick's Seminary and University in Menlo Park, California. I teach seminarians apologetics, but I also teach and have been teaching for close to 10 years now at Holy Apostles College and Seminary. Their campus is in Cromwell, Connecticut, but I teach in the online program. So I teach every semester, fall, spring, and summer. I teach an academic course in apologetics for undergraduates and graduate students.
Okay, reason I was asking, I have a friend of mine. I thought for some reason you taught at the University of San Diego, but my mistake,
no.
My mistake, because I have a friend of mine. She's a Spanish instructor at the University of San Diego. So
yeah.
That's the reason for the call. Also, earlier you mentioned, what country was this Bubble Buddy?
Australia.
That you brought up Australia. Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Cyrus is going to get a link to that story posted. So you can read it for yourself. It is just crazy, but things are getting crazier. So what can you do? Just be glad that you don't live there. Well, I'm not going to give the number out because we've got only a few seconds left. I will be, I think Dee Dee in Phoenix, maybe quickly we can get to Dee Dee. Hi, Dee Dee. Welcome.
Hi.
How can
Mr.
I help?
McGrid.
Yes, hi.
You just burst my Guevara bubble. And I'm not trying to be facetious.
Yeah.
I lived through the 60s. I followed the Cuban whatever. Oh, and I don't have a quick question. What is your valid historical source for this?
I tell you what, I'll share that with you tomorrow. And so please stay tuned, Dee Dee, and I will share with you background on Che Guevara tomorrow for sure. Until then, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you. Yeah.